Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are sifting through just a massive stack of articles, developer diaries, Reddit threads, all of it, to talk about a phenomenon that has completely dominated the gaming landscape here in 2026.
It really has.
And honestly, it's kind of a weird one.
It is. Usually when a game takes over the conversation like this, it's because it's, you know, incredibly fun. It gives you that massive dopamine rush.
Right. But with this one, the sources you've pulled, they're not using words like fun.
Yeah, not at all.
They're using words like grueling, exhausting, and my favorite, a masterpiece of misery.
Yeah.
We are, of course, talking about Pathologic 3.
And my personal favorite description from one of the reviews is a poison you must drink, which you have to admit is a hell of a marketing tag.
It certainly grabs your attention. So that's our mission for this deep dive. We need to unpack why thousands of people are voluntarily subjecting themselves to this, and why critics are hailing it as a defining work of art. We're going to look at the gameplay, the very strange meta-narrative, and the philosophy behind it all. But to start, we really have to look at the context, because this is a sequel, but my understanding is that it's a massive departure from Pathologic 2.
It's a complete inversion. It's actually brilliant how they've done it. If you remember Pathologic 2, you played as the Hari Specs Artemy Burak. And that experience was incredibly visceral. It was all about the body.
You were digging in trash cans, right? Yeah. For scraps.
Exactly. You were a local. You were down in the mud, scavenging for bread, sleeping in abandoned houses. The difficulty was your stomach growling, your exhaustion meter. It was physical survival.
Okay. So that was man versus hunger, basically. How does Pathologic 3 flip that?
Well, in Pathologic 3, you play as Daniel Dankowski, the bachelor. And he is a completely different animal.
The guy in the long coat.
That's him. Well, he's an intellectual from the capital. Long leather coat, pristine gloves. He arrives in this town not to survive it, but to command it.
So he's not an underdog this time.
Far from it. He's an invader, in a way. He views the whole town as a petri dish. He's a man of science, of logic. And the game does this brilliant thing where it weaponizes that arrogance against you.
I love that setup. Because usually in games, being the smart guy with resources makes things easier.
You'd think so. But here, the game really explores what happens when that arrogance meets pure entropy. Dankowski isn't worried about starving in the same way. The stress isn't in your gut. It's all in your head.
So I'm not digging through trash. What am I actually doing? How does the game make being a doctor in a fancy coat feel stressful?
That's the core shift. It moves from managing resources to managing information. You're not the foot soldier anymore. You're the general.
Yeah.
But you're a general fighting in a complete fog.
Okay.
And to do that, the developers introduced something they call the Mind Palace system.
I've seen screenshots of this. It looks complicated, like a conspiracy theorist's wall with all the red string.
It does, and that's the point. Your inventory isn't a backpack full of rusty knives and bandages.
Okay.
Your primary inventory is your thoughts. You collect facts from dialogue, from notes, from just observing things. And these facts just sit in your mind palace as these little nodes.
Wait, so instead of looting a cupboard for a bandage, I'm looting a conversation for a premise.
Precisely. And here's where it gets mechanically stressful. You have to manually connect these nodes to form a conclusion. The game doesn't do it for you.
Okay, walk me through an example. How does that play out?
So let's say you find a note that says, the water is tainted. Then, a bit later, you see that children are playing near the Gorkon River.
Right.
You have to go into your interface, into the Mind Palace, and physically draw a line between those two thoughts.
And if I connect them, the game gives me a conclusion like, I must issue a quarantine order for the warehouse district.
Yes. And once you have that conclusion, you can act on it. You can use your authority as the bachelor to lock that district down.
That sounds actually pretty satisfying. Like being a detective.
It feels satisfying at first until you realize the horror of this system is that the game lets you be wrong. This is the cruelty of it. The game lets you connect dots that are logically sound but factually incorrect. You might connect the tainted water note to the wrong district's death toll.
So you issue the quarantine order?
You sign the paper. Guards go in, they board up the doors, maybe they even burn a few houses down to create a fire break because you ordered it.
And you did that based on a bad hunch.
You did. And the next day, you walk past that quarantine district, and the infection rates haven't dropped at all. But the people you locked inside are dead, starved. Or worse, you didn't miss a shot in combat. You failed because you were smart in the wrong direction.
That is just a whole other level of cruel. It's weaponizing the player's own logic against them.
It creates this heavy intellectual burden. Players in the forums talk about physically hesitating over the sign order button, terrified of their own deduction. You can kill people with paperwork.
It's interesting you mention that pressure because Dankowski is obsessed with time, isn't he? In the lore, his whole thing is defeating death and time.
It's his driving force, and the game mirrors that obsession perfectly. In the last game, time was this river that was always sweeping you away. Here, they've implemented a non-linear time management system.
Non-linear, but it still takes place over 12 days, right?
Still 12 days. But Dankowski can, to a limited extent, sort of pause and review his timeline. It's like an editing suite for the day's events.
So you can change the past.
No, you can analyze it. You can see the conversation you missed at 2 p.m. You see the gaps. It's almost more torture than health. It just shows you all the doors you didn't open.
The ultimate project manager's nightmare. You have the perfect plan, and then reality happens.
Exactly. You're trying to impose a grid on a world that is fundamentally chaos. Which brings us to the thing breaking your grid. The enemy. The sand pest.
I was reading about this. It seems like the disease itself is different, too. It's not just a debuff, right? Your health bar turning green.
Right. It's not just a math problem anymore. The sources all say the sand pest has a will.
A will. What does that even mean in gameplay terms?
It means the pest is treated like a sentient antagonist. It's not just biology. It's an entity. Dankowski sets up these intricate barriers, antibiotics, quarantines, hygiene protocols. He builds a fortress of modern science.
And the pest just walks through the front door.
It cheats. That's the word players keep using. It moves into districts where there should be no way for it to get there. It feels like it's listening to your plans and actively countering them.
That's terrifying. If you think you're fighting a germ, you act one way. If you think you're fighting a mind, that's a whole different war.
And here's the kicker. Dankowski refuses to believe it. He's a man of reason. He has this high-tech microscope. It's a whole minigame. And he looks at infected tissue, expecting to see bacteria.
And what does he see?
He sees structures that look like syntax, like ancient grammar.
Whoa. That's unsettling.
Isn't it? The sources describe it as a linguistic infection. He's looking for germs and finds a language he can't read. It's this war between his modern reason and the town's ancient miracle.
And the visuals seem to play into that. The geometry of decay, they're calling it. It's built on the new Unreal Engine. But the art direction is very, very specific.
Totally. When you played as the Haruspex, the world was warm, muddy, organic, browns and reds. Then Coffee's world is cold, sharp, geometric, blues, grays, harsh whites. It's a sterile view of a dying world.
And then there's the polyhedron.
The polyhedron, this massive, impossible glass structure that just defies gravity across the river. It's an architectural nightmare.
And for Dankowski, that's like his church, right?
It's his idol. It represents the ultimate goal, a structure that rejects the laws of nature. It proves physics can be beaten. So that's the visual conflict, this impossible glass needle on the horizon and the mud and blood of the town dragging you down.
The sound design is part of that, too. I heard a clip of the ambient audio. And unpleasant is an understatement.
It's designed to be abrasive. You get this industrial grinding mixed with this low tribal chanting. But the real horror, according to everyone, is the silence.
That's so.
Well, in most games, silence means safety, right? The fight's over. Here, silence means death. When you walk into a district that's been totally wiped out by the pest, there is no sound, no wind, no birds, no crying. It's a vacuum. It uses peace to terrify you.
It really seems like the developers are almost hostile toward the player, which I guess brings us to the meta narrative. The game knows it's a game.
Oh, yeah. They push it to the absolute limit here. You're constantly reminded that you're an actor in a tragedy. You have these figures called the executors.
The ones in the bird masks. Yeah. Nightmare.
You know, total nightmare fuel. And they don't just show up in cutscenes. You'll be walking down an empty street and an executor will just be standing there and they talk directly to you.
To the player. Not to Dankowski.
To the person holding the controller, they'll say things like, a poor performance actor, the audience is getting bored, or you are trying too hard to be the hero, that isn't your role.
That's so condescending, I love it.
It's pure Brechtian theater. It forces you to distance yourself and remember that this is a role you're playing. And that role is specifically the translator.
Do you translate?
Yeah, it's a huge part of the gameplay. The town is split into factions, and they don't just have different goals, they have They speak different languages, conceptually.
So the children speak in riddles.
Exactly. The children speak in riddles with this terrifying ancient knowledge. The workers speak a language of suffering and earth. And then you have the Cains, the ruling family, who speak in high philosophy about utopias.
And you're caught in the middle.
You're the bridge. When one of the Cains tells you, we must preserve the immortality of the town, you have to decide what that word means to them.
Does it mean saving people's lives?
Or does it mean sacrificing the people to preserve the idea of the town, the memory?
And if you translate that wrong in your mind palace?
You make the wrong call. You let hundreds of people die because you thought immortality meant health, when to her it meant legacy. It's a game about communication breakdown.
Which feels incredibly relevant. People just talking past each other.
It is. And that leads to the big philosophical so what of the game. Why go through all this?
Yeah, let's get into that core conflict. Because under all the misery, there's a serious debate happening.
The central conflict is basically transhumanism versus tradition. The question the game is asking is, does humanity have the right to defeat death?
That's a big one.
Dankovsky believes death is a mistake, a flaw in the code. He wants to save the polyhedron because it proves we can transcend our biology. The other side, the kin, believe death is essential, part of the cycle. Remove it, and you destroy the soul.
And the game forces you to make a choice.
It forces you to perform triage, not just medical triage, moral triage. And there are no good answers.
Give me an example. What's a choice that really stuck out in the research?
Okay, there's a scenario they call the antibiotic dilemma. It's late in the game. You have one single dose of the cure,
yeah,
panacea. You find two infected people. One is a child representing the future of the town. The other is a brilliant scientist who is this close to synthesizing a vaccine that could save everyone.
So the utilitarian choice is the scientist. The emotional choice is the child.
Right. But here's the catch. The scientist is old and might fail anyway. The child could grow up to be a tyrant. You don't know. You have to choose now. And the game doesn't pat you on the back. You give the cure to the scientist, and you have to watch the child die. There's no mission complete, just a body.
That is brutal. I assume the other scenarios are just as cheerful.
There's the fire break. The infection is spreading in the poor district. Your lab is in the wealthy district next door. Do you order an artillery bombardment on the poor district, killing everyone, healthy and sick, to create a fire break and save the lab?
My God. It's the trolley problem with artillery shells.
It is. And if you do it, you save the lab. But for the rest of the game, you have to walk through the smoking ruins of that district you destroyed. You have to live with the consequences.
It sounds absolutely exhausting. And I keep coming back to this. Why? Why would anyone play this? We play games to escape, to feel powerful. This sounds like a simulator for anxiety.
You know, I think that is exactly why it's a masterpiece,
right,
and why people should play it. If you want a dopamine hit, go play a shooter. If you want a power fantasy, go be the chosen one in an RPG. Pathologic 3 is a mirror.
A mirror reflecting what?
Your own hubris. You start the game as this arrogant man in a coat, thinking you can fix everything with logic. By the end, if you survive, and that's a big if, both Dankovsky and you, the player, are just shattered.
So the character arc isn't leveling up, it's being humbled.
It's leveling down your ego. You realize you can't control everything. You realize that sometimes you can do everything right and people still die. That's a very mature feeling for a video game to evoke. It's a poison, yes, but it's a poison that cures you of the illusion that you're a god.
It's fascinating because it feels like an antidote to the gamification of everything. We're so used to bars filling up and getting rewards. This is anti-reward.
It respects you enough to let you fail. It respects you enough to let you feel bad.
Well, I have to say, you've done a good job of terrifying me, but I also feel strangely compelled to install it. It feels like something you have to experience.
Then the infection has already taken hold.
I suppose it has. To our listeners, I'll leave you with the question that the game itself poses. Are you willing to step into Dankovsky's shoes? Do you believe that utopia is worth the sacrifice of humanity?
Because in Pathologic 3, you can't have both. And don't say we didn't warn you about the silence.
Indeed. Thanks for diving deep with us. Good luck in the step. You are absolutely going to need it.